$2 late fee. You have one new message.
Hey, Zach, Dustin, Rick Kane here from the North Shore. Listen, I'm in New York City. I finally finished art school. I know it's been forever, but I'd like to go back to Hawaii. I was hoping you guys might hook me up with a plane ticket because, you know, I know that the podcast is just blown up and you guys are super famous and rich. So I was hoping maybe you guys could help me out. Let me know. Call me back. Bye.
Before there was IMDb.com, there was Zach and Dustin.
You know those guys who think they know everything about a movie without having to go on the internet to look it up? Well, that's us, but maybe only for the years 1981 through mid-1989.
No, I'd say late 1978 through early 1992. Either way, we know movies. And even more specifically, we know soundtracks from those movies.
Yeah, this is $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
This is the podcast where we pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it still holds up today.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Thanks for listening. On to the show. Alrighty, Broheim. We are here once again for a very special episode. This is, I'm excited about today because this is the first time where we are actually doing a little bit of like a best of, but not in a clip show way, just like this is like a best of rerun that we are highlighting today. I can say quite confidently, and I will not pull any punches, today's my favorite interview that we've ever done.
Yeah, from the opening, you obviously know that today's interview is with Matt Adler, the one we did a little while back, but this was one that we wanted to re-air to remind people of how good it is, and that you can listen to these interviews more than once. Don't just give it a one-off. And you and I were both saying, we should record a new intro for this because we have a lot of new things coming up that we want to talk to everybody about, clearly. And
clearly.
And we chose this one because, hell, it's one of our personal faves.
Yeah, Matt Adler is a rock star. Not literally, but he is a wonderful, wonderful guest. When we had him on, I think it was about a year ago, we talked about North Shore. We talked about Teen Wolf. We talked about Whitewater Summer, which is a $2 late fee, absolute favorite. You know, we always kind of hashtag that one where it's like special because it's got a great soundtrack and a great cast. We also ran down the nuances of that film prior to when the interview originally aired. I love this interview so much. I know I keep saying that. I just want to kind of get to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I want to get to it too. And I was saying to you offline that this is the closest people are going to get to a North Shore Part 2. And I like the fact that we are now a part of the North Shore universe.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. Not many people can say that Rick Kane left a message on their answering machine.
Asking for cash. People,
yeah, right. So, yeah, and we also have some very exciting things on the horizon. We are launching the official $2 late fee Patreon page in the coming months. Next month. And we're going to have a lot of really exclusive offerings. So just wanted to kind of run down a few of those things for you guys right now, because we really appreciate. I mean, I think the number one thing is we really appreciate your support. We've been doing this podcast for about a year and a half now. It's been incredible. It's been incredible not only, you know, for us doing it, I think, creatively, but also to see how everyone has responded to it. You realize so many people also love the movies and the characters and the actors that we love so dearly. And it's just been a really cool journey to do this.
It has. And you know, one of the reasons why we want to do this Patreon is obviously these shows aren't free. you know, for us, we put a lot of time and energy and personal finances into the shows to make them the best possible. And so we were thinking, well, what is a cool way to basically, you know, ask for money? Because that's what Patreon is, right? But do it in a way that is going to give something back so people don't feel like they're just throwing money away. Like, what's that thing that they're going to go, oh yeah, this is totally worth it? Well, Dustin and I sat down and put our brains together with our memory banks and try to come up with some really solid incentives for everyone to join Patreon. And hopefully it sounds great to you and you're like, yeah, I'll pitch in. If not, that's all good too. The fact that you just simply listen to the show and enjoy it and engage with us in social media is fantastic, and we love that. But this is just something extra. You know, everyone's doing Patreon. Everyone has a Patreon page. So what makes ours so different? Well, we're going to tell you.
Yeah. As a little bit of a sampler right now, we're going to have multiple tiers in which you can join up. But the biggest thing will be a lot of cool bonus content. $2 Late Fee is a podcast that is born on the name of the late fee that one would pay generally when you returned your video late to the store. So one of our first offerings will be Tales from the Video Store, where you'll hear, because Zach and I both worked at video stores, we've got a lot of tales ourselves, and so it'll be tales from us, tales from special guests.
Well, we'll have to have Keith Coogan back on and talk about his time in the video store.
Right, absolutely. I mean, Keith Coogan, and, you know, speaking of our celebrity guests, we do a segment called $2 Six Questions. That it will be a Patreon exclusive. You will hear that only here on a certain tier, and you will also be able to ask those questions or submit those questions for us to ask. And then some other bonus things. What else we got?
One that's very near and dear to our hearts is that famous mix CD that everyone has enjoyed, mm-hmm. that we sent out way back when. Well, here's the deal. If you sign up for Patreon, you're not going to get one mix CD, but every few months, probably about six, you'll get a curated 10-song disc of some great tunes from a bygone era that we all love to talk about.
It is a great, you do, Zach, for those that might not know, Zach does the best mix CD. It's almost like you're kind of taken back to a time maybe when, like, you know, he had a crush on you and wanted to tell you in through song.
You're going to get that. My wife can attest to the mix CDs that I've made her, that they're really damn good. And for all you...
I mean, that's how you got her, right? That's how you asked her out.
It's one of the ways.
Yeah.
And so these CDs will have songs, clips from the movie, trailers, a little grab bag, if you will, of fun. And it's going to be something that's very unique to the show, and you're going to love it. And that's definitely one of our favorite tiers to throw out there. I mean, those three things alone, the Tales from the Video Store, $2 Six Questions, mix CD, at different tiers, I think those are a slam dunk. But we also have other stuff too.
We have other stuff too, yeah. We'll have What Does Dustin Know? A fun trivia game related to the year that certain movies came out. And also, Why Does Zach Own This? Where Zach will own the most, Zach does. He owns some really ridiculous things. And you're like, why? I'm always like, why do you own this? And then we'll kind of dig into that. Or sometimes it's like, why do you own this? You know, or it's like, why do you own this? You know, the various levels of why one would own something.
Take on that one.
Yeah. But they all convey different, you know, levels of incredulation. I don't know if incredulation is a word. Incredulence. Yes, so we'll also have that, and then maybe, you know, some special, you can get a special voicemail yourself. I mean, it's very exciting. A lot happening leading up to launch. So stay tuned for that, and we thank you for your consideration, because we love bringing the show to you, and and we really, really appreciate your support. And then one other thing to note is that we've kind of been doing fairly recently these events on Clubhouse, where we kind of all get together as retro creators, whether we're 80s, 90s, 70s, podcasts, musicians, everybody just goes on Clubhouse. We kind of all collaborate, we talk. We've been kind of doing it in kind of a soft launch way, but coming up in the next month or so too, we'll be doing that about once a month. and we invite you to join us.
And we wanted to put all this out to you today because it's obviously a lot to unpack in a good way. And we thought, well, let's not do our typical episode. Let's put one of our faves at the end of it. So in order to like kind of hook everybody in. And so you're like, okay, I'm listening to Matt Adler. And I'm also finding out all this great exclusive news. So for all you great listeners out there, we're rolling towards the end of year two with some great stuff that's going to keep pushing us forward into the very long future.
Renewed energy and very exciting. You know, there's just a lot of things happening. We're hoping to offer you guys like exclusive opportunities and things like that too. So I feel good about where we are. I'd love to launch into this bad boy. Matt's rerun is waiting impatiently.
Matt's probably saying to himself right now, guys, you said this was your favorite. Why didn't you just get to it? Well, without further ado, here's Matt Adler.
Matt Adler, thank you for being on $2 Late Fee.
That is me.
Welcome.
Very much. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
We're really excited to have you here.
I'm really excited to be here. Oh, I will say this, for my first ever podcast.
It is? Oh wow. Then this is really an honor. We were already honored, but now we're really honored.
Well, yeah. And I was told there would be, you know, no math, no, you know, and that it wouldn't hurt.
Right. There are a lot of math podcasts that are circulating, math surprises, I should say, where you go on a podcast and they're suddenly like, what's 49 times 15?
Exactly.
Like, whoa. I've heard of those. So that's good that, there's no math.
We got it in writing.
There might be a live crossword puzzle, though. We might do that.
That's fine. Any English-based testing is fine.
Did you bring a number two pencil?
No.
Okay, sorry.
Our Scantron is loaded in the back.
Very good.
The Scantron, there's the pressure to not go outside the lines. You're like, if I go outside the lines, my college career is over. Mm-hmm. I could just not get into school. And I'm like, it's a Scantron. I read it wrong.
Just put C for everything, and you're bound to get a certain amount right.
I think I learned that in the movie Summer School.
Yeah.
Where I was just like, just go. Thank you for being on our show. Dustin and I were, as we were getting ready for this, we were talking about, okay, a lot of movies that you've been in that we are huge fans of.
Well, thank you very much. You happen to be fans of movies that were made in the decade when I was getting hired to do movies. So that worked out well. That was good.
Well, you were born in L.A., right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, Valley kid or?
Yeah, Valley kid. Grew up in the West Valley, Woodland Hills.
Oh, wow.
And I've lived all over the city since, but I always wind up back in the Studio City area. I just love it.
And you've seen a lot of changes then, obviously.
Oh, yeah. North Shore, actually, one of the L.A. premier theaters was the Studio City Theater that became a Bookstar. It became a Barnes & Noble. And then a bookstore used to be an actual theater, and it was beautiful. And I was like, this is so awesome. This is my neighborhood, and they're putting my movie in my theater. It was really cool.
Oh, now that's cool.
It was cool.
Yeah, it's a little bittersweet, obviously, and knowing now it's a, even if it's a bookstore anymore.
Still a bookstore.
Amazon bookstore, what do they have now? They have Amazon bookstores, and I'm like,
is it a Barnes & Noble?
No, it's a bookstore, whoever owns it.
Okay, it is a bookstore. It's literally a bookstore. Yeah.
Well, when they do the the 30th reunion or 40th reunion, so...
Didn't they do one? I feel like I was just at one.
Zach's got a story.
Fun fact. Okay. I met you about 10 years ago. At the Arrow Theater in Santa Monica.
Arrow Theater, right.
My
Teen Wolf one or North Shore one?
North Shore.
Okay.
Because my wife and I were getting married later that year. This was maybe 8 years ago. 9 years? Yeah, 9 years ago. I had my bachelor party there. And my buddies and I all dressed up in Hawaiian shirts.
I remember. I remember meeting you guys. Until you said bachelor party, I didn't. And I was thinking, I'm never going to remember this. But I remember that. Like four guys, five guys?
Yeah, I
do remember.
And John Philbin said, you know, he's like, you're having your bachelor party here? And Nia Peebles was like, oh, that's so sweet, you know? And I think you were like, hey, do you want to get a picture? I'm like, yeah, can I get a picture?
Do you have that picture?
I don't have that picture pulled out.
Oh,
I know.
Man.
That would have been the closer moment of that story.
I know, and I crashed and burned.
Like,
actually, I don't know. There's a photo somewhere that exists, and I never got it sent to me. It's in one of those video montage.
Was it taken on film?
Yeah, I think it might have been on a little snap. No.
With Yuck. A camera?
Yuck. With a camera. It might have been a flip phone.
A camera that did not work as a phone?
Yeah, right.
That's weird.
Anyways, it was, you know, quite a little while back, and here we are full circle now in our studio. And yeah, we want to get into North Shore. We want to get into Whitewater Summer, which is honestly one of my personal fun favorite films of all time.
Oh, it's so awesome.
It's really, yeah, because we were reminiscing about it.
We went into a weird rabbit hole yesterday on the phone, and I don't even know why. I was talking about I haven't seen it in a while, but, you know, basically the fact that the movie seems to have been marketed as something that it is not, like where I'll just have to show you the poster, but, and then maybe, our audience can't see it, but it's basically, you know, it's like Sean Astin, because it's Sean Astin starting in the present when he's a cool grown-up guy telling this story that shaped his life, but they're marketing it as like, you know, he's like a guy who's just so cool he doesn't give a damn, and you're what?
Exactly.
That's not what it is?
Well,
this isn't...
you have to know they did that all afterward, and I can't remember why they felt like they needed this bridge to explain, and I can't remember. I mean, I remember... Well, first I have to say, I'm 53 now, and I look back on, I don't have the same kind of attachment to movies or my movie life or my acting career that I did, like, for a long time afterward, and didn't look back on those movies with the fondness that I do now.
Yeah.
I have a sweet spot now for all of those times and all of those movies.
That's great.
It's probably just part of being an older person and, you know, looking that, you know, back on my life with more sweetness and, you know, sort of melancholy and bittersweet about lots of, you know, good times. And that was, and just thinking about that movie is a very, you know, it's my first big, really, like, that was a big deal to get that job.
It was a big film, and it had a really, in my opinion at the time, a big cast.
Yeah.
You know, and
Kevin was huge, coming off of Footloose and Quicksilver or whatever it was. Maybe Quicksilver was
Quicksilver, out. Yeah.
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 And, you know, he was as big a star as there was. So to get to be in a tiny little ensemble cast like that for me was just a huge break.
And Sean coming off the heels of Goonies and being the hero in Goonies. And then Kevin kind of, I remember seeing trailers as a kid marketing Kevin almost as the villain in this film. But then when I saw the movie, it was a different story.
Well, he was, I mean, the movie originally was called Rites of Summer. It was this sort of coming of age story through this traumatic event that happens. They've sent their kids into the woods with a psychopath.
Right.
And that's not the marketing.
Right.
The
movie. So here's the post. I just want to pass this over to you. You can see this poster.
I remember.
It's very tiny.
It's like,
we were
all like,
yeah.
Are you kidding me?
That's the movie?
That's
right.
Yeah. Cause so you were saying those scenes with, for those people who haven't seen the movie, Sean Astin he looks like he's maybe 13 in the movie originally.
Yeah.
And then they have these scenes later on.
17, whatever.
Yeah, because he has braces.
Some obnoxious teenager and sunglasses.
Yeah, kind of attitude. And I always felt as a kid watching that, and I didn't really understand movies at that time, but feeling like they added that on after the fact.
Totally. Yeah, and there are plenty of movies that do those types of things where it doesn't feel like that.
Yes.
Was so clearly designed to look like it was fixing some sort of problem. And I can't look back and remember why they felt that was necessary.
Right. Like, who at the studio was like, this is not registering.
Exactly.
You know, and for our audience, just to understand. So it's a movie about, a group of kids who go out with an older counselor, an older experienced Whitewater counselor, played by Kevin Bacon. His name is Vic. Mm-hmm. And I just always, you know, leave him alone, Vic. That always echoes in my head. Leave him alone, Vic. Because Vic is very mad at Sean Astin. Because Sean Astin is, he's so defiant, even though he's kind of not, but he's just a kid and whatever. You know, go on this trip. As you said, it's a trip of just a summer adventure down Whitewater Rafts. And the movie poster that I passed to you says, it's just Kevin Bacon and a very cool, arms crossed, John Astin going over a canoe, a waterfall in a canoe. And it says, the strong don't give up, the tough don't give in, and the cool don't give a damn. And it's like, no, no.
Just hearing that. This like, I don't even know that I read that poster. Right. That's absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
But that's a classic. This is a classic studio story.
Okay.
So from what I remember, this movie's budget was right up there with, like, you know, I mean, maybe it was a $15 or $17 million movie in 1985. I mean, it was like, it was a big budget movie with Columbia Studios.
Yep.
Okay, so during the, I mean, I can't remember if it was actually during shooting or right after shooting, wholesale firing of like the entire head office of Columbia Studios.
Wow.
They're out. New regime comes in, and as they are often want to do, they just broom everything, whether it's in the can or not. Like, they just waste money. They just throw it out because it's not theirs.
Yep.
Well, somehow this thing got a new life in this studio, and they sent us to New Zealand to go reshoot this bridge crossing sequence.
It's a great scene.
Which is a great scene, and that was a great investment because that was so much more terrifying than what we shot in California. The reason we went to New Zealand was because it was already now dead of winter here, and we had to go there to shoot summer.
Where in California did you shoot?
We shot all up in the Shasta City region and the Eastern Sierras, Quincy, California, the Crested Butte. Absolutely, I mean, breathtakingly beautiful. It was really mesmerizing type of, you know, that sort of beauty on the McLeod River. I mean, we were in heaven because I love that sort of thing. So, but we were supposed to shoot start in like late July and shoot 3 months. We didn't even start until like mid-September.
Oh, man.
So it is absolutely freezing at some parts. And we were swimming in these creeks that are, you know, 50, 48 degrees, and we're just, you know, you see us playing in the water. We are literally chewing on ice cubes so that we're not breathing out steam.
Oh, my God.
They're melting snow off the ground in certain scenes.
Yeah.
Because
you get snowfall early up there.
We're shooting in, you know, the last week of November and first week of December. Whitewater summer.
A summer movie.
I have pictures at home. I should have. Why would I?
Well, for the follow-up.
For the follow-up, I will. Yeah. We have pictures of us off camera in these huge down parkas standing by these space heaters. Like, and then it's jackets off and running in and shooting these scenes in our shorts and t-shirts.
Yeah, because that movie, it takes place during the summer. You guys are wearing your, you know, cut-off jeans, short shorts like one does in the 80s. And you had a sweet, kind of down jacket, like a denim jacket that I was always a big fan of. And I wanted blonde hair as a kid. And I wanted that whole look. And I thought your character, you were like really tight with Vic. Your character, Chris, is really like buddies. Like, you've been down this road before.
Yeah.
And as I was a teacher for 15 years, I taught kindergarten. And now as a dad, I see that camaraderie that a young kid has with an adult where you look up to that person and you're like, wow, that person's God.
Yeah, I want to be like that person.
Yeah, and you look like the younger version of Kevin Bacon. Yeah. You had the long hair and the whole deal. And I remember as a kid, I'm like, that kid's cool. And your departure where, like, you finally stood up to him, you know, and you're like, that's enough. I'm like, yeah, give it to him. Come on, Chris. Be the man to save the day. You know, and then it cuts to Sean Astin. He's like, let me explain what's going on in this scene here, where he just kind of breaks the fourth wall and he's talking to the audience. And I'm like, no, get rid of those scenes. But going back to the nature, like, as a kid, there weren't many movies I would watch all the way through credit from the beginning to end, but that was one of them where I wanted to see where the filming locations were, because as a kid, I'm like, I want to go there.
Yeah.
I want to have a whitewater summer. I want to be the one to go on that bridge. There's a bridge in Vancouver, in Victoria Falls, which is one of the highest suspension bridges in the world. And at the time, in the 80s, they didn't have, it wasn't that rickety, but it didn't have any barriers to keep you protected. It was just straight across. And a lot of people would fall to their death. And there were like monuments for all these people. It's now been since reinforced and all that, but as a kid I did that and go up to Vancouver and I'm like, oh, I'm in Whitewater Summer and I want to listen to Iron Maiden Somewhere in Time and then get my tape player thrown against a tree like Vic does.
And then I want a counselor to chase me aggressively and yell at me, and maybe I'll
be
knock
left
him over
out in the woods in the rain and maybe die. Yeah. I want that experience.
I want that Cutting Crew song to play when I'm having my montage in the wilderness. Right. And that was the other thing, too. The music in that movie was so good, from Bruce Hornsby in the beginning to Journey at the end. It's just, and that's the thing about our podcast. Not only do we love movies from the 80s, but we love music from the 80s, soundtrack specifically. And certain montages pop in our heads, and these moments where we're like, that fuels our energy, whether we're at the gym or whether we're working on a project or whatever.
Well, it goes right to the base of your young brain when you're, you know, that's why, like, these movies, for all of us, that you see them at these impressionable ages, they burn a much deeper groove in us, I think, than when you see things as an adult. Like,
I agree.
You're like 13, 14, and all of that, like, who am I going to be?
Yeah.
Who am I going to be? And we start to watch movies, and there's such a glossy version so much of the time of the life, of what's possible for a life.
Yeah.
And you're watching Kevin Bacon, you're like, man, that guy is, he's cool. I mean, look, I was 18 doing that movie, and I was thinking to myself, looking at Kevin Bacon going, that guy is cool, man. Like, you know. So, but when we're like that, I think it is those ages of like 13 to 17 or 12 to 17 where you're so impressionable. Yeah. And when you see those things, they stick really hard. And the music that you hear, and so anytime you hear it as an adult, you're like, it just rockets you back.
Your part goes like this. You can't run, you can't hide, you can't run, you can't hide. Wait till I point to you. Ready? Now, if it's love that you're running from, there's no hiding place. Love has problems, I know, but those problems we just have to face. Can't run, you can't hide, you can't run. Now, if you just put your hand in mine, we gotta leave all our troubles behind. Keep on walking, don't look back. Don't look back. Now if your first lover broke your heart, there's something can be done. Can't run, you can't hide, you can't run, you can't hide. Don't you lose your faith and love just because of what he's done. Can't run, you can't hide, you can't run. Now if you just put your hand in mine, we're gonna leave all our troubles behind. Keep on walking, don't look back. Don't look back. Keep on walking. Don't look back. Don't look back.
You now look back on those movies with a fondness. But at the time, you were blowing through, because during that period, you had this like kind of catalog of movies from like 84 to 80, I think 88 or so.
Yeah,
right?
88, 89 maybe.
And was Teen Wolf, or was it Flight of the Navigator was the first one that
Wolf was first, actually. Teen Wolf was the first movie job I ever got.
But did you always want to be an actor when you were a kid, or?
No. I mean, when I was growing up, I had a lot of really typical male, I think, was archetypal type, you know, I was going to be a baseball player, I was going to be a fireman. By the time I was like 14, I was a very serious tennis player. And I sort of had to make a choice of whether or not I was going to continue to pursue that. And I didn't have it. I wasn't quite good enough, and I mentally was terrible. And so I started surfing, and that really threw a wrench into any other type of study of any kind. Surfing became a total immersion.
Really?
And and the surfing lifestyle, which is accompanied often with a lot of drug use and alcohol use, and that was kind of the road that I went down. So really, high school, I took a play production class, the drama class, because it seemed easy, really. It really just seemed like a fun, I guess, thing to do, and I knew a guy in it, so I took it, and I found that I really liked it. That being on stage, and especially comedy, doing something and having people laugh with you was a really powerful sensation for me. I just kind of kept doing it. I really didn't know where it would go. So the next year I, you know, did it again. And And then my dad's or my mom suggested, you know, why don't you take a class, you know, somewhere? So I did, and I went and studied at Lee Strasberg Theater Institute in L.A. And,
okay.
You're in the right location for it, certainly.
Yeah, and I really didn't know anybody else who did it. Like, I didn't have any friends who were actors professionally or a family member. So I didn't really know what I was doing in terms of, well, I guess this is how naive I was about it. I didn't think, like, I was doing plays, right, live theater, and I'm studying theater at Lee Strasberg, and I didn't know that people who did that also did TV and movies. I thought they were completely separate people who didn't, you know, like, I really didn't think that they did the same thing. Like, that acting, what I was doing at these classes and what they were doing on TV were different.
Well, I think
I didn't understand anything about it, right? Or what an agent was, or like that there was a way that I could do that.
Yeah, it was kind of promoted that way, though, because when we were kids, TV actors were TV actors, theater people were theater. Like that, I perceived it the same way.
Yeah, that's kind of how it's. I perceived it without any stigma. Like when I got into it and understood, oh, the movie and the TV thing is a stigma thing.
Yeah,
I just thought it was just they were just separate. Maybe you had to have a license for one and not the other. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You could be an EMT, but you can't be a firefighter.
Exactly.
You get it? My dad was both, but that's...
that's a worthwhile career. I mean, if you like that life-saving thing sort of.
They don't give awards for that.
No.
Come on. Well, they should. I mean, that's just, you know.
That's just what you do.
You do.
You just save lives.
What, everybody gets a trophy now? Is that the way the culture
works? Yeah, that's right. You want a participant ribbon because you saved the lady?
Yeah, because you saved the lady who jumped out of the house.
Yeah.
Great.
Good job. Is that what you needed? Everyone needs a medal.
So how did that lead you to Teen Wolf?
So I did a play, and this... it was kind of a strange... Like, the people that were in my class were... some children of some very famous people. There was like Chaz Bono was in the class. So Cher was like a stage mother, right?
Yeah, of course.
Eduardo Ponte, I don't know if you know that, this, he's Sophia Loren's son. So she's like a stage mother. So when we actually do this play, the audience is like a star-studded group. Like, you know, Cher's bringing her friends, and you know, so it's.
Did you feel pressure at that point, or did you not even know who that was? Did you not care?
No, I knew who Cher was for sure, but I had already at that point I'd been to her house, so like now I knew her as a lady, as a person. Like,
I know what snacks she serves.
Exactly,
I'm very comfortable.
I know the dog's name.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
I bought Girl Scout cookies from her.
Yeah. Right. So, but this woman, her name was Susie Bono. She was Sonny's wife. Mm-hmm. Said that I should meet this agent. And again, I didn't know what an agent does. And so I went and they started, you know, sending me on auditions. And I went on Teen Wolf audition. I had done an episode of, what did I had done an episode of, gentlemen?
Trapper John. Wow. I was going to say, because you got the connection with Gregory Harrison.
That was going to be a question. Oh, did you meet Chandler before?
I did.
You must have.
I did, yes. And he did not remember. Because he was... in his, you know, having his own life at that point, of the 80s.
Yes.
Did he pretend like he did remember you?
I think I probably said, hey, I met you when I did a thing.
Right.
But
just like I did with you, but I didn't have the photographic evidence just like you didn't at that time.
Well, if I had said, and I brought a bachelor party
to
the
set,
he might have remembered.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I was 16.
That was very weird.
And I believe the character I played in Trapper John M.D. was named Matt Adler.
Oh.
I may have that wrong, but I think that, they may have changed the family name in the script. Because my name was Adler, but I think originally that character's name was Adler.
It's listed as Brian Christopher, but
how dare you?
Interesting.
How dare you contradict me on live television?
Right.
How
using dare information you? From the internet, no less, that
God
we just wrote, and I just wrote in Brian Christopher as we were talking to thwart him.
Fun fact, Brian Christopher is never mind. I was going to say it's a favorite of mine, but.
Oh, right. A favorite name. A favorite.
Is that right?
Boom. No, it's not. No. But, you know, I just want
to
make it clear.
So I went on an audition, and I really... Here's a fun fact that you won't know, Mr. 80s geniuses. There was a movie.
He's got an earpiece, and the live, they're going, his name is Brian Christopher. Brian Christopher. Help,
yeah. They're feeding
yeah,
it to
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Jim J. Bullock in my ear.
I was auditioning for this movie, and I had gone on several callbacks, and I wanted this thing so bad, and it was called Just One of the Guys.
Oh, we love
one of our
that
favorite
movie.
Movies of okay. all the time.
Yeah. So,
and why did you want that so bad?
First of all, this was a big part. The brother of the lead girl,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, buddy, right.
buddy,
buddy,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, I think it was Billy Jacoby.
Yeah,
it was Billy Jacoby
back
days.
Then. Yes,
yeah. Who was like a bit of a rival for me. I mean, like by this time I'd been auditioning quite a bit, and like you start to see, like, oh, we're all the same guys going for all of the same parts, and he was one of my nemesis. So I got that job, apparently.
Okay.
I was sitting in one like a third or fourth callback, and this producer walks out of the room and looks at me and says, come on, are we going to hire this guy or what already?
No!
Okay.
And I was like,
okay,
I don't know, are you?
Are you? Oh, got it.
So yeah, I leave.
In a good way. Okay.
And I call my manager, and I'm like, here's what he, blah, 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 blah. I'm buying luggage. I'm going on location.
Yeah.
That had never happened before for me. I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, while this is going on, I have gone on a couple of auditions for Teen Wolf.
Okay.
I've gone in to read for the casting director, and I think I went in and read with Jerry Levine.
Yeah.
And maybe Michael. I can't remember. And you'd think I would remember that because he was a big star already, right?
Yeah, and you were always reading for the role of Lewis.
Always Lewis.
Okay, and so Lewis for the audience is
yeah, maybe I like did. Yeah, maybe I read for Styles also, but
okay.
I did go in for a callback, and I know I was reading for Jerry that he was already Styles, I believe.
Okay, so there are three friends. It's Michael J. Fox's character Scott. There's Styles, of course, and then there's you and the three friends.
Correct.
So you read it again.
So I don't know, the end of that day or maybe the next day. We get this call that is, you're not doing Just One of the Guys. I'm like, I was like, what? How's that?
Yeah.
What do you mean I'm not there? Doing that?
Yeah.
That guy said that thing about me.
And how many times have we heard that where you're like, oh, you're perfect for this?
Right. Yeah. But I mean, I had, there was no reason to think that. So I guess what happens is in these rooms is that guy wanted me and the director maybe or somebody else wanted somebody else.
A fight occurred.
A fight ensues. Yep. And then Billy Jacoby ends up getting that job. And I'm like, I am so down. Yep. I am like, it was brutal. Brutal.
Man.
And we love Billy Jacoby as an actor. And he's had some very memorable roles. But, you know, he didn't have the lead role in North Shore. So.
Yeah.
I harbor no ill feelings towards
him. No, but what you're talking about
at
that
time. At the time, that was a devastating thing.
Right. Yeah, yeah, of course.
And the next day.
This is at the start.
I had gotten word that I had gotten Teen Wolf. And I was like, oh, well, all right.
I guess I'll do this Teen Wolf movie.
Yeah,
I really wanted to be the guy who scratches my balls, and now I get to be the guy.
Yeah, and I wanted to, like, you know, be like, because Joyce Heiser's going to be rad and.
And she is.
Yeah.
She's rad.
She's a great person.
But, you know, Michael was pretty rad.
But is she radder Jerry's than Michael J. Fox?
Is she radder? You
know? Jerry and I became very good friends for a very long time. And
I ran a summer camp at his house.
You ran a summer camp? For Matthew? Or
In Malibu. For his daughter.
Oh.
That's another story.
This is weird.
A summer camp?
A day camp.
It's the weirdest thing I've ever heard you say.
Same summer that Michael Jackson died. Same summer.
2009.
Yeah.
In 2009, you ran a camp at Styles' house?
For Michael Fox or for Jerry?
For Jerry.
Explain this.
So I was running a summer camp at a parent's house. And
meaning you were coming up with activities, the kids that were coming out.
Running
he had rented
camp.
A house in Malibu for the summer.
No, he has a home. He and his wife.
His wife, okay, Nina.
Yep. Yep, and they have a home out there.
Okay.
And they came to pick up the kids one day, or Jerry did. He's like, hey, do you guys want to do this at my house and at the beach tomorrow? And I'm like, really? And the kids are like, yeah, let's do it. I had no idea. He walks in. I'm like, I didn't even know, you know, his daughter, he was the dad. And I'm kind of having a moment where I'm like, yeah, because look, I was a teacher for 15 years down here working at schools where a lot of industry people were a part of it. And it was not a big deal to me. But there's certain actors that would stand out. I'm like, oh, I'm a really big fan, you know, but I would never just say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, he walks in, and I'm like, well, it's Styles, also Iron Eagle, and like, you know, yeah, having my moment. And then he says, he was being super cool. He's like, do you guys want to come over to my house for to do the day camp in Malibu? I'm like, okay, sure. So we just caravaned out there one day, and we were there all day, and it was fantastic. It was a wonderful time. A couple days later, two random kids show up this summer camp, and they were the nanny's kids of the family that we were hosting at their house. And we were in the backyard of this field, and one of the kids was poking a stick in the ground. And he's like, I go, what are you doing over there? First of all, I don't even know who you are.
Right.
Second of all, what are you doing with that stick? He's like, I'm just poking in the ground. I'm like, you don't want to poke your stick in a hole because you don't know what's going to come out of it. Fun fact for every kid to know, understand in life. Next thing you know, his little brother who's next to him starts screaming, and he's covered in hornets.
Holy.
And the rest of the kids start freaking out, and they all start getting bit. I start getting bit. I run over to the kids, and I'm pulling the hornets off their head, crushing them with my hands, and I tell them to run. We run down the hill, past the tennis court, past the pool, into the house. The hornets chase us. This is 100% fact. You can check with Jerry about this. I run into the house. I'm killing hornets, like stomping on them with my feet. Kids are screaming. I'm pulling them off their bodies. We were barricaded in the house because the hornets have chased us in.
Holy
I killed literally
shit.
Killed 30 hornets. One kid got stung 13 times. Oh. One of my good friends. He's now a friend of mine, Simon. And I have to call the parents one by one. I'm like, this is what happened, blah, blah, blah. Everyone comes to pick up their kids. Everybody's fine at this point because hornets, even though there's a very small amount of venom, it just hurts,
right.
You know. Parents come, get their kids. Like, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. They bring a exterminator in. He finds the hornet's nest. It's the size of a large football, maybe a rugby ball.
Over
100,000 hornets in this thing. They said, you're lucky that
and
none
this,
of,
was it in the ground?
It was in the ground.
Oh, and this sticking, kid was sticking.
He just basically punctured a hole into
that
it.
That nanny's kid.
That kid did not get stung once.
Of course not.
Now is probably a good time, Matt, to tell you that every episode involves a really traumatic story from Zach. Sometimes he's almost kidnapped.
Right?
Sometimes a gang. I mean, they're all true, of course.
Yeah.
Today, it's a hornet story, which I've heard the story, but I did not know what happened at Styles.
I mean,
backyard,
that makes it
which
really,
makes it, yeah.
Well, it wasn't his house.
Really
it wasn't his house.
No,
it was our friend's house.
It was at his house. He was responsible.
That was really
100,000 hornets.
Yeah.
I will check. I'm going to talk to him.
Ask him about the hornet story.
This is the greatest excuse to call him. I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Well, there you go. I got this great story.
Fantastic. Oh,
so,
my
God.
So, nothing that exciting ever happened with me and Jerry after the filming of the movie.
I'm going to say, did that happen on Teen Wolf?
No. Really didn't.
But going back to Teen Wolf, sorry for that. I tend to do this in my daily life.
No, listen, that required that story.
It did require.
I ran a day camp at Jed Styles' house.
Like, absolutely,
what? Yeah.
There was a very natural segue. It was not like a name dropping thing.
No, I didn't mean
no. And the fact that I've heard the story without that name drop in it.
And really, the thing is that it's your podcast. It's not. It's about you.
Yeah, but you're
it's our
guest.
Podcast.
I will say
it's all you, of us collectively.
No, I will say you want to ask Jerry, and I won't tell it on the air, but you'll want to ask Jerry the John Mayer story about his son.
Okay.
If you don't know it, it's a really hilarious story.
I don't know if I do.
Okay.
So
I'll tell you off air.
Named Matthew.
Jerry, it's Matt. How are
yes.
you?
I'd like to think, by the way.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
Named after you.
I'd like to think so.
Well, I would like
I've
to think.
I've often liked to think so.
I would like to think that every Matthew in life is named after you.
Yeah, even the ones that came before me.
Yeah,
even the Dave Matthews Band.
That's right.
I believe is
that's right.
named after you.
Mm-hmm.
So, so Teen Wolf was your first kind of big experience being on a film.
Yeah, I had no idea.
With some A-list actors.
Had no idea what I was doing. Really, I mean, like, what's a mark? Like, I mean, I did that one episode of Trapper John, but I'm in a gurney that entire episode.
Okay.
By the way, like, I never. No walking and talking. No, so they've got me driving the van or driving a car.
Yeah.
I was lucky I made it out of that thing alive and that I didn't hurt anybody or run anybody over because they just let me do it, you know.
Really? So you're driving the van and...
Yeah, I mean, they let what you see is what you get. There was the stunt driver when the stuntman is on top of the van,
he's
the wolf and he's
you were not
doing
driving
backflips. No.
Yeah.
But... yeah, all other, it was the 80s, so like, you know, anytime like they could put an actor in the real stunt situation, they would. That really was a giant leap of safety things that happened.
Amazing.
And after the 80s.
Contracts not signed. Your character in that movie is interesting because, watching it as a kid, I was always like, why aren't you friends with Scott anymore? You know, like I was upset that you didn't like him anymore.
Yeah. People have a real, it was surprising to me. People really reacted to that character being, they always come up to me and they're like, you were scared of the wolf. You were the one who was scared.
But having said that, like if I turned right now and Zach was suddenly a werewolf, I think I'd be a little, whoa. You
agreed.
Didn't tell me
I
you
think
were
it
a werewolf.
Makes sense.
Right?
It like, makes sense that somebody might not be cool with it. With the teeth and the eyes and the growling and the killing.
Yeah, and the kill. It's the, know, right, but it's, is it? But it's the killing.
It's the
murdering. Right,
because
it's the question
mostly.
Of like, are you murdering chickens?
Yes.
Are you? Yeah. Like we
werewolf.
Don't know.
Werewolf.
You're a werewolf.
Like it's a. Most movies depict this as a terrifying creature.
Yes.
This was one of the first that made it into a comedy.
That's right. And where a werewolf can come up with his own dance.
Yeah, totally.
A lot of movies, a lot of werewolves don't do that.
No.
Well, and Stiles is the opposite of Lewis.
Yes.
Like the complete opposite.
Right. He's like exploiting the wolf.
Sure.
He's merchandising the wolf.
Yeah.
He's, you know, it's a marketing opportunity. His best friend is now is super athletic. I guess when you're a werewolf, you can excel at any sport, as we've learned.
Apparently. Apparently, yeah.
Yeah. You have really great balance. Mm-hmm. And as you said, you can dance.
Canine DNA, I guess, is some very important for athletics.
Clearly.
Yep. Yeah.
They can catch balls in their
mouths. My dogs are really athletic, and I'm very envious of their speed. I was like, wow, wide receiver. My dog, Ida. I'm like, wide receiver.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she's old now. She's not as fast. But the point is, yes. So I guess I'm saying I right now, I don't necessarily disagree with you about having like a friend who, because on one hand you're like, oh, well, you're just abandoning your friend because he's a werewolf now. Like, that's not cool. But like, he's not really treating you the same way. Number one.
No, he's getting cocky.
Well, because he's groovy now.
Yeah.
He doesn't need Lewis.
So he's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely a point in that movie where he is kind of a dick.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. I think everyone agrees.
Yeah.
Boo agrees.
Boof.
Boof.
Boof. The best name for a character as we've... What is that?
I don't know. I don't ever have talked to, what's his name, Jeff Loeb about it. Like,
Is it short for something? We
I don't
talked
remember.
About this.
Well, but I know that this question is.
You should
come
talk
up.
To Brett Kavanaugh about boof, because apparently he knows what boofing means. Farting.
Yeah, apparently it's farting.
Right.
That's a whole other story.
So, I know that almost at every, like, I've done a couple of Q&As at screenings for that movie, and it always comes up, and I can never remember the answer.
People always ask you about the name?
Yeah, they asked Jeff or somebody there about like, the name of this name character.
Well, you would think Loeb is he's the guy who wrote the movie. He should know.
He would know, and
origin.
I think he does know, and he does tell the story.
Yeah.
And yet, no one. I think it's like this thing, like no one can remember. It's like almost like the Men in Black.
Poof,
poof, and like hits, and no one can remember it.
Yep.
Her name is Boof,
which
and
is
I love
odd
it.
Because he just keeps having to answer the question.
Maybe he
right.
If he didn't do that. He wouldn't have to
he
say
He set himself
anymore.
Up for a life of answering that question.
Maybe that's the only thing people want to ask him. So,
not about Commando.
He wants it
or
to be an endless, you know, it's the only interaction he has with other humans.
Not about his work with Marvel or anything like
Maybe,
that.
Maybe, I don't
like
know.
If some, if, you know, if anyone has a baby and they're like, I named the baby Boof, you're like, okay.
What's it short for? Please tell me
what,
it's short
it stand for
Jane?
Something.
Yeah.
Well,
best
came...
overreaching...
It's an acronym for something.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I Boof came out around the same time that I knew this kid named Duff, and I was like, Duff is such a weird name.
That
Duff
makes sense.
But it didn't to me at the time.
Duff
though.
Makes sense.
But Duff, it's just it's the. It's
I was
the,
like, is that short for Duffel?
It's not alliteration, but whatever the vowel sound, the long oo,
and
boo and poo. It's like it's all bad.
If your name was
Duff, it's like cool.
Doof. It's not Doof.
Yeah, it's not Doof.
Yeah.
Duff. Let's be honest, let's be clear.
Yeah.
It's not Doof.
It's not Doof. Rough segue, but Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah. Well done.
So you went directly. So Teen Wolf was a big success.
Yeah. Yeah. They somebody had a genius thought. Hey, let's wait till they release Back to the Future, then let's release Teen Wolf. Like they were.
Yeah, because they came out.
Hey, we can figure this.
Yeah, we felt like
I
was
hard
like
to run a studio.
Teen Wolf came out. It was an older film. Like, it felt older to me because Michael J. Fox looked a lot younger.
Yep. There were some days, this is insane, he was doing Teen Wolf, like, he was doing Family Ties in the morning, coming and doing Teen Wolf, and then doing Back to the Future at night. I mean,
God.
It was like, cocaine fueled like insanity.
Had to be. Yeah, because how else can you survive? Yeah.
He was just like, and he handled, he did it.
He did it. Yeah. Like a champ.
Like a champ.
And you, so you went from, how did you get that role in Flight of the Navigator as Jeff, the younger brother slash older brother?
Yes.
In a weird way.
Yeah.
For those people who haven't seen it, I won't spoil anything. It's worth checking out. It's amazing. Yep.
It's another one of those... you know, movies, like, as you know, especially since you're such big fans of movies from this era, that there was a just a different tone to 80s movies. I mean, there was a really was before the and I'm not saying they're better or worse, but it, nostalgically, I guess there's just a much more sweeter sense in a lot of these movies. There's always some heart. There's always, you know, and it was before edginess had its day. It was like before things had to be cooler, before things had to be rougher and more real, I guess. You know, I mean, I think feel like the River's Edge was the first movie that I remember.
I love River's Edge.
Yeah. We all did, and we all wanted to be in that movie.
Yeah.
We all were clamoring for those auditions. But that was like a really dark teen movie.
Yep.
Really dark.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Darker than anything I think that came before it that I remember. I sort of remember it in that order.
But, yeah.
But anyway.
I'm sure Zach will find something to correct you with. But
I was going to say Over the Edge, but that's kind of an unknown film. The Matt Dillon movie.
Yeah. Matt Dillon.
But yep. River's Edge, I don't think River's Edge would have happened if it wasn't for Over the Edge, in a sense, because maybe. It was this kind of...
Well, it might have been Razor's Edge is the one you're thinking of, the Bill Murray...
Oh no! I'm thinking of Over the Edge with Matt Dillon when they're in the subdivisions.
I thought we were just talking about only Edge movies.
The Edge with Alec Baldwin and
The Edge of Tomorrow was in the future. But,
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Very good.
Okay.
Edge challenge. Go. Yeah.
But back to what did you want to know about Flight of the Navigator?
No, I was so you was the how did you land the role in Flight of the Navigator? Was that one of those I just auditioned for and I got the role?
I sort of feel... Oh, I know exactly how I got it. They were already shooting in Florida. And I don't know if possibly somebody had dropped out or they had just not cast this part yet. They had not found. And I put it on video and it was sent and I got the job. So I flew. Bingo. I had never met... I hadn't met anybody. Wow. I had just come home from doing Whitewater Summer. I had just come back from the Sierra Nevadas doing that movie.
Okay.
And... I flew directly to Florida and did that movie.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, and met some great people, Howard Hessman and Randall and Sarah. And it was great.
Well, you had a connection with Howard Hessman later on with Amazon Women on the Moon.
Well, he's responsible for me getting that part.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I love it. He was going to do that movie pretty soon after, and he recommended me to, I guess it was to... not the one who directed Sound of Music. They have the same name. What was his name?
I'm going to give
Bob. Come on.
Well, Joe Dante.
Joe Dante was one of the directors.
Yeah. Bob Weiss.
Bob Weiss.
Yep.
Right. Robert Wise directed Sound of Music.
Yes.
And I kept saying Robert Wise, and people were like, I don't think Robert Wise directed your segment of Amazon Women on the Moon.
Well, we had on our Instagram, we put out a little thing saying, does anybody have any questions for Matt, you know, as we go on? And
we chose
a few, and this guy, Daniel Garcia,
Danny,
he's a big fan of Amazon Women on the Moon. And he said that the condom scene with Kelly Preston was hilarious. And so I hadn't seen that movie in a while.
Yeah.
And I watched it the other night. And I had never made the connection that you are George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life.
That is correct. I don't think that was a mistake. Yeah.
Clearly it's intentional. But as a kid when I watched, because it came out in 87, and I love It's a Wonderful Life, but I didn't really start watching that until I was in my late 20s when I was starting to date. And I'm like, oh, this is a great, you know, romantic,
Yeah.
You know?
Romantic comedy. I think someone had to tell me what the character name meant. I mean, right. I think when they said, I was like, oh, cool. Whatever.
Yeah, you didn't really care, right?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really. I had no nostalgic connection to that movie.
No,
either. And still don't.
It's a very memorable scene, though, where you're buying condoms, and it's like there's a few moments.
Merry Christmas, condom store.
That's a great.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. I'm going to wrap a lasso around that condom. And that summer of 42 was a great, you know, I need to buy some rubbers or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But yours, it's like a 5-minute scene because it's a series of vignettes in that film.
Yeah.
And was that? Did you enjoy making that movie?
Oh, my God. It was a blast. It was hilarious. Also, by the way, my first ever on-screen makeout scene.
And nice. With
Kelly Preston.
I mean, if you're going to make out with somebody.
Come
it's
on,
pretty good.
Right?
She 87?
As far as first makeout
I was
requirements
after,
go.
After Mischief?
A+. Damn.
After Mischief, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh,
and before Kelly. Twins?
Yeah. Before a lot
before
of
before John
happened.
Travolta's marriage.
Let's move on.
But I was going to say.
Moving on. Moving on.
It's a very fun scene, though.
Yeah, it was great. It was lovely. And Ralph Bellamy, I mean. And there was something kind of awesome. I think that movie was like his 100th film.
Ralph Bellamy?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, for those people that don't know, he's a legendary actor. We talked about him in Trading Places as Randolph, I think was his name.
We did, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did.
And he's classic in that. But you're having this great, awkward teen moment.
Look, Violet, why do you say we go park out by the lake? My glands are out of control.
Well, okay, Georgie. But are you prepared?
I've been preparing myself for 17 years.
That's not what I meant. Pull over to that drugstore. Georgie, make sure you ask for Titans. Those are the best.
Hello, George. How are you?
Oh, hi, Mr. Gower. I didn't think you worked nights.
My night man took sick. What can I do for you? We're having a sale on shaving cream. What am I saying? You're not old enough to shave yet.
I haven't shaved since March. See?
Hey, I better call your mom right now and thank her for the preserves she brought over to our...
Not now. I mean, don't bother. I'll give her the message for you.
I bet I know what you want.
You do?
Sure. I was young once. Licorice sticks. They came in fresh this morning.
Mr. Gower, I'm 17 years old.
Already? Seems like only yesterday your mom was in here buying talc to powder your little bottom.
Look, tube of toothpaste and a box of Titans.
Toothpaste and what?
Box of Titans.
You have to speak up, George.
Titans. I want a box of Titan condoms.
George! And to think you were an altar boy.
I remember buying condoms at a Long's and like putting them amongst things to hide them. And it's always when you buy them, they have to like make a big deal out of it.
Price check on condoms.
I think she might have said, "You sure you want these?" And I'm like... Yeah, and I want the squirt soda, and I want the Swedish fish.
Right?
I'm having a party.
It's like the last American version. You know what you use these for, right? Yeah, you fill them with water and throw them off the roof. Yeah, it's like, that's right.
Was that Lawrence Monison? No.
Last American Virgin?
Yeah.
Well, we just had Diane Franklin on our show talking about Last American Virgin and that being a canon film and with those guys. Yep.
Sure.
You know. But yeah, so Amazon Women on the Moon's a fun scene and fun vignette little moment for you.
because it was the sequel to essentially Kentucky Fried Movie, which people, you know, really responded to. And I think that it wasn't, I don't think Amazon Women on the Moon was as good, but there were a couple of vignettes in there that I thought were really funny. I mean, it was the first time I think anybody had seen Arsenio Hall.
Yep.
Very early on Arsenio Hall. Griffin Dunne. I mean,
and I love Griffin Dunne.
Yeah. Really good.
After Hours is one of my favorite movies.
I had a camp at Griffin Dunne's house once.
Wow.
Did you get attacked by bees?
Yes. Yeah, no, it wasn't bees.
It was attacked by bats. There were bats in the attic.
I will tell you that's my 5-year-old, one of his favorite stories to tell about me. Oh, yeah? Well, do you know my dad killed hornets with his bare hands
at Stiles' house.
Stiles.
So did you film North Shore after Whitewater Summer?
Oh yeah, quite a bit after.
Okay,
yeah,
because they all came out around the same time.
I know, isn't that wild?
87, 88.
Yeah, but I started. I think we shot North Shore in 87, came out in 88. Whitewater Summer started in 85.
That's crazy. So that's why Sean Astin looks 13.
He really was.
Yeah,
13.
With the braces and everything.
Yeah. I mean, he was like, I think him and Jonathan Ward were maybe 12 or 13 when they got to shoot that movie.
And you were 18 when
I was just 18. Yeah. And Casey Martel, I think, was the same. We were the same age.
And you did look older in that movie. And yeah, just to go back, because I love that movie so much and I love your character so much. There was so many, it was such an adventurous, fun coming of age.
And to be clear, we're going back to Whitewater Summer.
Yes.
Just to follow along, because it's, you know.
Thank you for refereeing.
Not, you know, sometimes when I'm listening, I go, what? Did we, was it clear? Did we understand? What? Yeah, we're talking about Whitewater Summer again.
This is my brain. I go all over.
Bing, bing, bing.
Yeah.
Well, what is your, am I allowed to ask questions?
Oh, ask as many. We encourage it. We welcome it.
I love them to be asked questions.
What, like, what do you think it is that is your fascination with 80s movies? Like, why is that your thing?
Oh, he's really thinking about
it. I'll leave the room if you need a moment.
I don't, I thought he was looking at
you. I'm like, both of you. They're both of you.
I know the answer. I know the answer. I grew up, I was a latchkey kid. So I was raised in front of the TV.
Right.
And riding my bike to the movie theater. The first experience of being able to do things independently was going to the movies. And being exposed to these, I just loved drifting away to another world. I didn't have a lot of friends, so I love playing with my toys and reenacting things. And I loved to draw. I loved all those creative outlets. So films for me were an escape.
Mm-hmm.
So watching Whitewater Summer, being 12 years old at the time or 13, and totally relating, wanting to be Chris, but understanding that I wasn't. I wasn't even Sean Astin's character. You know, I would have been one of the outliers. Mm-hmm. I just want to kind of go along with everything. And I wanted that experience. I wanted to go on that journey. I wanted Vic. That's why I was so, I wanted to think that he was a good guy at the end of the day, which I feel like he is. I feel like it's just disconnected. He was on a power trip, and which happens to a lot of teachers, a lot of educators. They get into this power role and they think, oh, I can, you know, I can dictate who does what and when and where, and you become God, essentially, to these kids. And for me, it was an escape. Like, oh, I'm going to go on that adventure. I'm going to go to North Shore and surf, you know? Mm-hmm. I can be the Daniel LaRusso and overcome the odds and become the champion at the end, you know? Mm-hmm. I can do all that stuff. And that was me wanting to be that character. I moved from Michigan to California in 84, you know, 3,000 miles cross country, new start, didn't know anybody. Awkward phase, all that whole deal. Mm-hmm. And this was my escape, you know?
I think the 80s, too, they're just lousy with movies like that. Like the whole awkward teen overcoming, becoming. I mean, it's like there was not a better decade of film for you to feel that way about and watch movies. Because, like, you, I mean, you mentioned all of them. This sort of triumph over loneliness, triumph over awkwardness, triumph over feeling not a part, you know, feeling left out or not as good as. Like, the 80s was just all about teen, you know, triumph. Teen triumph.
It was overcoming the odds.
Yeah. Against all odds. Against the odds.
Against the
what makes me think of
Jeff Bridges?
No, against the odds.
The time that Phil Collins and you ran a day camp.
There was a movie, Francis Ford Coppola, The Outsiders.
Oh, yeah, The Outsiders.
What year, when was that?
That was 81.
I actually don't know, but that sounds right.
I think it's 83, actually.
Yeah, I think it was before.
It feels right.
Like that, I think, I sort of feel like that's the movie we all were trying to get. Like, after The Outsiders came out, it was like, what's the next one of those?
Yeah,
that's the greatest. That was one of the greatest movies I'd ever, like, that as an actor, like, you just knew, oh, that's the one you wanted to be in. That's the one that we all should have been in.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And every single one of those guys.
I mean, were you approaching it more like, you know, oh, I wanted to be in that movie, or just more like, you know, that was just such a beautiful story represented
all
perfectly.
All of it. It was like to be an actor in Los Angeles at that time, that was the pinnacle. Like, that had everything. It was a tremendous story. It was the epitome of cool.
Yeah.
The way that it was, the timeless sort of era that it was depicted in. Like, when was that? Like, as you're watching that movie, it's like the tones in which and it was the most famous director. And it was like the, it was, because in those days, like, it really mattered who you had worked with. Like, it was career making to, like, if you went into, and your resume had, you know, some those directors on it, it mattered for the job that you were auditioning for that then.
Yeah.
Like people, if you worked with so-and-so, then you were a of a certain, you know, you got hired by Francis Ford Coppola, or you got, you know, David Anspaugh, or any of these, like, guys who were directing those movies at the time, Peter Weir, like, it mattered.
Yeah. Sure.
It mattered.
Sure.
So, not Lloyd Kaufman. I was in class at Newcomb High.
Lloyd Kaufman.
Toxic Avenger, Class of Nukem High.
I didn't understand that either, but that was,
That's my point exactly,
but it
though.
It felt good.
Yeah. No, but that idea that, you know, so it's funny you say that because I have a kid that I work with who's 10 and he's reading The Outsiders right now, the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading that at 10. Life changing.
Wait. You have a kid who's 10?
I have a student I tutor.
Okay.
Who is 10.
I was like, 10. Wait a minute.
I don't know if I would have understood that book at 10.
He doesn't know. Yeah, he doesn't because it's also 10 in 2020 versus 10 at 1986, which is when I read that, or 85. And I said, well, you know, contextually, it's a totally different time. You know? But he's really engaged with it. He's like, this is fantastic. I said, well, if you like that, as you get older, you'll want to read The Catcher in the Rye, A Separate Piece, all these great stories, but see the movie as well. Like, that's one of those times where you read the book, you see the movie, and actually it is a culmination of these lightning in a bottle, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure.
And I can imagine at that time in 84, 85, when you were just getting started, watching that and going, I should have been Pony Boy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you look at the resume that everybody went on to, and they did fantastic, you know?
Yeah, every one of them.
Yeah, every one of them.
But I want to go back to you talking about this time when, like, you made a movie at this time and then didn't come out till much later.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, I didn't put that together, you know?
Right.
And here you are making Whitewater Summer, and then another movie comes out, and you're like, but I did that already, and, you know, I had long hair then, and short hair, whatever. And then you go on to make North Shore after that.
Yeah. So Randall Kleiser, who directed Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah.
Was producing the North Shore.
Okay.
So after we finished Flight of the Navigator, some months later, I can't remember how long actually, he contacted me and he asked me, do you surf? And I said, yeah. And I'd been surfing since I was, you know, 13 years old, and my room at home had been, you know, plastered with surf. You know, it was my whole other life outside of working as an actor was about going surfing.
This is like a dream job for you then.
Well, believe me, I was like, I'm not going to invest too much in this because this is too, like, so he sent me the script and
I read
it. You were kind
of cynical at that point. You had been I was like, I know how this goes. Fuck. Just one of the guys I had,
So I read it and I was very excited about the prospect of it. And he said, but, you know, this actor really needs to be able to surf. So will you go make a video? I was like, absolutely. So I went, my friends, you know, I mean, we were making a video too. It was like big video camera, you know. And I went and filmed myself surfing and I sent it to Randall. And he was like, wow, you really surf. Like, you can turn. And I was like, yeah, I really surf. And so apparently they wanted to hire a surfer, a pro surfer, a kid in Hawaii, As Rick Kane, who could. Like, they wanted him to do all, you know, all the surf scenes. They wanted an authentic, you know, surfer. So they found all these kids. Also, you know, they found all these, like, incredibly good-looking, like, kids, you know, who were, like, you know, up-and-coming surfers. And I think that everybody was excited by that in terms of the marketing of a young, handsome guy.
Yeah.
And Universal ultimately would not okay the act that they were having trouble finding one that could act the part and do the actual acting part.
Okay.
So
sure.
That's why I got that job. I mean, that's why I had a chance to get that job was because Universal wasn't going to okay a non-actor.
I don't see anybody else playing that role. I mean, you know.
Well, thank God. I mean, it was me. Yeah. So, you know, however it shakes out in the world of getting acting jobs, like when you originate a part, like it's yours for better or worse.
Right.
It's you. And so, yeah, nobody can be Rick Kane but me.
Well, we talked about when John was on our show about how Dustin and I were both saying, you know, Rick was kind of a dick to Turtle. Like he treated him really poorly.
It happens.
And it is a coming, you know, kind of turning around. You just have this attitude and edge about you. And he was being very diplomatic. He's like, yeah, well, and we're like, no, hold on a second.
Like we were saying that he just went so above and beyond, you know, for like Turtle went so above and beyond for Rick. Like, welcome, I'm going to introduce you.
Yeah,
and then
who's giving him the time of day? Nobody.
Right. And then you're suddenly like saying to Gregory Harrison, like, well, you know, your art kind of sucks. And you're like, dude, you just got here. He's offering you like a job, you know, like who's this guy? Like, he comes in, you know, I could do a better job because I'm going to art school. No, next summer. I'm like, Rick,
I can really draw.
Yeah,
I'm sophisticated. Yeah. I'm from Arizona,
right?
Yeah,
I will say, and I can show you later. I make notes for my son every day,
mm-hmm.
and he, they're pretty detailed,
they're very detailed. They should be in a gallery.
like notes like. Hey, I'm leaving. Have a great day. Type
it's,
notes.
It's but, in his but lunchbox.
In his lunchbox.
I've been making them since he started preschool.
Right.
So that was a couple
he's
years ago.
He's 40 now.
Yeah.
He's,
right?
Yep.
He's graduate school. Right?
Exactly.
He's running Universal Studios. Right.
Oh, yeah. He still packs his own lunch.
Yeah, I tell you, he loves notes from his puppy. So
He was started at as 5, and then he became 10. You see in the course of the story.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he's really
he
just keeps jumping. Yep. He's reading The Outsiders.
Incredible.
Yep.
But I made literally. We're going up to almost 500 notes now, and I make and they're pretty. Yeah, like Destin said, they're very detailed. And when he knew I was interviewing John Philbin for our show. And he knew who Turtle was, and he wanted to watch the clips. And he's like, who's that guy? And he said, that guy's name is Rick Kane, and the actor is Matt Adler. And I want him to understand that the movies are movies, and there's all actors and stuff like that.
Right. You know?
And so I put 80s characters in his notes because he knows who they are. So I did a note of you with Turtle in the background holding Chandler's board or whatever. And he's like, yeah, I like that surfer guy. And I said, yeah, I'm going to interview him in a couple days. He's like, oh, cool, you know. You're going to interview Rick Kane? I said, no, his name's Matt Adler. And we'll watch that movie when you get a little bit older.
Right.
So. I mean, the tough part is his son knows nothing about current pop culture at all, but he's the perfect 80s 5-year-old.
He also thinks that his dad knows, like, all
these
the characters,
characters
are real.
That his dad
you know
his
live
man.
In his mailbox, in his lunchbox.
They do.
That the notes just appear.
Yes, they do magically. But I was going to say there's a guy on Instagram, Al Bauco is his name. Al Bauco. He asked if there's going to be another North Shore sequel, and I'm sure you get that all the time.
People want to know, and there was over the years a couple of different. I don't want to say serious rumblings about it, but there were rumblings about it. My feeling, actually, and I actually said this to Randall not too long ago. There was a screening of Flight of the Navigator, and
at the Egyptian.
That's right.
Yep.
Were you there?
No, I was not. But
how dare
I was out of town. I was
how
out of
dare
town.
You.
I'm sorry.
I RSVP, but I did not go.
Because I didn't get first class status.
And he talked about it, and I just said, please. I said, let's not make another one of those movies.
No,
like it did its thing. It is its own, and all you're gonna do is like cheapen it. Whatever
100%.
Whatever magic that thing had or has, or like whatever. Made it what it is. All a sequel will do is blur that feeling.
It's it has done that pretty much for every single drama that has had a sequel.
Yeah, maybe not Godfather.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe, I mean.
But any sort of coming of age fun film.
But anything you're going to remake, you know, 30 years later, 35 years later.
Yeah.
I would say that the only time that happened, Karate Kid Part 2, I think, did a pretty decent job of that. But it was not Daniel's journey. It was Mr. Miyagi's journey. You know?
Empire Strikes Back was pretty good.
Okay, yeah.
There are a few.
But,
that wasn't 35 years after Star Wars.
No.
You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, no one wants to see this Rick Kane.
We do.
Well,
I will tell
you,
when you say goodbye and you say I'll be back at the end, it gets me every time. It gets me every time. And it's not just you saying that, but it's John's reaction and Nia's reaction when she's like crying or whatever.
And
like,
they kinda, start laughing.
Yeah, start laughing. But kind of I feel like they're crying at the same time, you know? And it, oh, it just gets me so choked up. And then that Journey song is Happy to Give is such a phenomenal, like, we talked about the episode actually where Happy to Give, that song. There, talk about another amazing soundtrack for a movie.
Talk your 80s, I mean.
You know, Pseudo Echo and, you know, and Gary Wright. But then that Journey song at the end, just like, again, your film it finishes with a Journey song. Whitewater Summer finishes with a Journey song. Happy to Give. And
Teen Wolf finishes with a Journey song. What's happening?
No, but Teen Wolf did have some great songs.
Maybe my life ends with a Journey song. Ooh. We'll see. We'll see.
Teen Wolf ends with that, like, Shooting for the Moon song or the piano. Like the,
yes.
I don't have it.
Were you a fan of 80s music? Like, were you a music
fan? Yeah, yeah. I wasn't as much of a fan of that straight up new wave, like Pseudo Echo type stuff. Like even like the early Oingo Boingo stuff, like not, I was much more of a big INXS fan, REM fan. I just started to get into like Elvis Costello and, but, you know, yeah, still like a little Soft Cell and like some of that, like, you know, super new wavy 80s stuff. Yeah, for sure.
Oingo Boingo, Just Another Day is my favorite song of theirs, but that's a killer song.
That's a great song. I imagine nowadays people can like surf with like earbuds in, and but right, but no one would ever like put a Walkman on and go surfing.
No,
right?
I don't know that I've seen somebody surfing with earbuds in. I don't know that I've seen that.
It seems like very impure or something, but like,
well,
but
also, the technology of like of wireless waterproof music is not. It's new. It's fairly new.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I now swim with like a waterproof iPod.
Oh, really?
But that's a relatively new thing for me. Like,
oh, that's cool.
But yeah.
But do you still surf now?
Yeah, but I don't.
You would never take
surfing. Never.
Because it's like your meditation would be like, well, and also like you've done it so long, it'd be weird to just.
I don't know. So much of the. Is the sound of it is you know, you wouldn't want to block out that sound.
I think I was turned off to sports as a kid because I didn't have that running soundtrack going through my head while I was playing the sport. I'm like, wait,
maybe they don't have that in Michigan because in California all sports come with a
montage.
Yes,
as they should.
Every kid gets a montage.
Michigan. Should have done that.
That's an LAUSD thing. I think that Title IX was every kid gets a montage.
You're right. We were talking about the movie Dream a Little Dream and how we've seen that movie, I don't know, countless times. And we're like, but did we really like that movie or was it confusing to us? But there's a guy named Phantom Cardboard is a company that makes movie versions like baseball cards of his favorite movies. He's done ones for like Bloodsport and Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Right.
And they look like old school Topps baseball cards.
Yeah.
But he takes the images from the movies. They're phenomenal. And he's a huge fan of Dream a Little Dream. And he just was wondering if that film holds a warm place in your heart.
Well, it absolutely does for me. I mean, there was like, I got to be a, you know, like a badass guy.
Yeah.
I got to be like a cool guy.
Yeah.
And
Dumas
and those jackets we wore and that. I mean, it was all
right.
Really,
yeah.
It was very cool for me.
Mary the Salinger's in it. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I met and like who would become my ex-wife in that movie.
I married
Rhea Pavia.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of an odd. And Jason Robards being in that too.
Yeah, Harry Dean and Piper Laurie. I mean, there's some legends in that movie that made it very exciting. I remember before I was going to North Carolina to shoot that movie, I knew I had the job and I knew I was going to do it. I ran into Harry Dean Stanton at a grocery store.
Okay.
And I was like, that's awesome. I can talk to him because we're going to do the same movie.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, my name's Matt and I'm in Dream a Little Dream, the movie in North Carolina. I think you're going to go or you already did. I don't know. And I think he said, and then I said, I play Dumas. I play, you know, the bad guy. And he goes, you're going to learn to hate that fucking title. And he just walked away. That was it.
You know where the Captain Crunch is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I was fine with it. I was like,
have a nice day.
I didn't even get that. He just was like on to the green peppers or something. But
yep.
I remember just going, Well, that's about right. Yeah. I felt about right, you know, for Harry Dean.
I love moments like that when you're like excited to share something with somebody that like so random, you know, and you're like, oh, so I did that thing that you saw and we're going to, and it's like, oh, hey, anyway. And then they walk away and you're like,
you never learn either because you'll do it again.
No, of course.
And then someone will just go, can you hold this? It's got a lot of my snot in it.
Right.
You know,
because that hoping that it's going to happen in a positive way down the road.
It never does. No. It almost never works out that way.
Yeah. But so, that movie does have a phenomenal cast.
Yeah.
And a phenomenal soundtrack.
I mean, I also, and you'll fact check me on this, but I think I'm the only person to beat up both Coreys in one movie.
I think that's true.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think that you should check on that because that's...
License to Drive? Did anyone beat them up?
No. I think Corey Haim does, but then in Lost Boys, they don't get necessarily beat up.
And not by the same person.
No.
That's good.
That's the key. That's the key. I took them both down.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Did you have a relationship with them outside of that film, or was it...
A little bit after the film with Corey Haim. I loved him.
He's such a talented actor.
Yeah. I loved him. Yeah. And it's just a sweet, really a sweetheart. And just, I mean, I can't, you just never know. It was just a shame.
Yeah.
Like he was one of those guys where he was annoying and he was too much of himself most of the time, like too much of a good thing sometimes.
Yeah.
But infectious and just like a goofball kid, just a goofy, lovable kid. And I miss him.
Well, you survived the 80s.
Yeah.
And when I say survived, I mean that in the literal sense, because there's so many stories you hear of being a young actor and having so much fame and then crashing and burning and you've had, you know, some issues come up and you've dealt with it, obviously.
I was really lucky. I mean, the biggest difference, like the difference is that I was sober before I ever got a good job. As
an actor. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was already sober.
So that surfing culture kind of started you down one path.
Accelerated the process from 13 to 17 years old, you know, of drug and alcohol abuse. Yeah, and I was really susceptible too. I was a really susceptible to all things that were cool and that I was supposed to be cool and what am I doing and what are all these cool guys doing. And so I just, you know, I got to the point where I would eat or drink anything, and so I did. And by the time I was like in middle of like 12th grade in high school, I was done.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Knowing that now has no relevance necessarily, but like who you were on screen always like resonated with me because those roles just really, I just felt like, I don't know, they were just so well written for you is what I'm saying.
Well, that's very, I guess that means that they cast it well.
They did.
You know what I mean?
They did.
They cast it for what I'd like to take credit for those, but I feel like I can't. But
you
maybe
can on our show.
My wife would tell me that I should because, you know.
On Trapper John, when they named you after the that's because really... the casting was so perfect and then they renamed the whole family.
And they knew. They just knew.
Brian Christopher.
There.
This is a rough segue, but you got into like ADR work, right?
Yes.
Loop groups.
That's right. That's
and for
right.
those people who are not familiar.
I always
familiar.
Say loop groups like that, by the way. That's why. I just go, loop groups. Whenever someone says ADR, I go, loop groups.
That's how I say it.
That's how you
weird.
That's how you get into loop groups, right? You just go, loop groups. They're like, stand around. He's got something.
Yeah. My voice always cracked when I tried to do it. That's why I haven't gotten into it yet.
Right. Billy Jacoby was up for the lead, you know, he ended up getting, no, what am I saying?
Loop groups. It always goes up too
high. No,
see? But so for those people that don't know what ADR work is, can you just explain that?
Sure. You know, whenever you watch a movie or a TV show, any scene where you see a lot of extras or a lot of other people or a TV on in a bar, or a cop walks in, he's got a radio on. Like, there's all these sound effects that have to be put in later. And one of, you know, many of the things that they do require actors to go into a studio and put voices in the mouths of the people on screen that you see. Mm-hmm. Because on screen, they're not actually talking. Because they have to preserve the quiet on the set for the dialogue of the principal performers. So those people in the background are typically not speaking, but they're moving their mouths and they're faking like they're talking. So we go in and we put voices in those mouths. We put the announcer on the football game on the TV set in the bar. We do the radio crosstalk for the police and the fire and the rescue and the helicopter pilots and all the stuff you hear as a... Mostly it turns out being a sound effect. You don't pick out individual stuff very often, but we also replace people's voices, replace actors' performances that they don't like, that, you know, producers don't like at the end of the, you know, we may replace that performance if it's a smaller, you know, part in a, you know, when they started shooting a lot of stuff in Canada and they would have this New York City cop station and this actor would come in and say, "What's this all about?" You know, we would sometimes fix that, you know, in the post. So we would do a lot of voice matching, you know, hearing a voice and picking the person in the room who's going to sound like them. And most time, no actors really ever know that they've been, you know, a word has been put in here or there, you know. So I got into that from a friend of mine who did a lot of it. And it's a very niche type of job. Like, a lot of people would like to do it. It's hard to get into. I was very, very lucky. I happen to be, this is one of those things in life where you just never know sort of where you're going to wind up. I happen to have a real talent for this type of work. It's a specific type of skill set. Very specific muscles.
It really is.
You have to be a super fast improviser because no one tells you what to say. You're not reading any lines. You have to be comfortable speaking believably at a wide variety of topics. I mean, I've got to go in and do Hunt for Red October, so I have to be facile talking about being, you know, being a crew member on a nuclear submarine.
Wow.
Yep. And then I have to go be at a dental convention and be talking believably about being a dentist. Like, you know, the variety is astounding that you have, but it's more about how you sound, that you own this thing that you're talking about. That's more important than saying the right terms or the right, and a lot of people can't do it.
I guess I would say I did like a loop group, like auditing or something, like where I was, you know, in the room, and I was so impressed by the group because it was like a Christian Slater, you know, when Christian Slater had like a million, like every
gleaming
every
liqueur,
no,
cuffs.
This is not 80s.
Wasn't cuffs.
This is actually in the last
pump
maybe
up the volume,
11
maybe.
Years. 11 years. Christian Slater had like a new procedural TV show on every 6 months or whatever. And this is like a Boston police precinct, and it was like, no, you gotta accents. We gotta have the accents. We gotta have the dialects correct, and we also have to know what we're talking about. If we're in a police precinct, we gotta throw out our codes. We gotta know what's going on. If the phone's ringing, how are we gonna answer that? You know,
right?
So I was, you know, and they were just throwing me in, and I was like, whoa, these aren't the muscles that I've used in like ever.
Right.
So it was great though. I was so impressed.
Do you remember who the group was?
I don't. My friend was a sound designer, so I'll look it up after we're.
It's possible. It's possible I was in the room with you.
Were they the Fruit Loops?
I don't think you were in the room with me. I feel like there was like one guy. It was a very female dominated group for some.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I will look it up after.
So that turned out to be something that I could be, sort of at the. Like I'm at the top of my field. And I'm really fortunate and I get to work a lot. And probably 15 or so years ago, after I had done a movie called Diving In, and it really started to slow down for me. I was just having trouble getting work. I was no longer any sort of fresh-faced new kid. And for whatever change in the landscape or who, for whatever reason, I was not able to, I just wasn't getting the jobs that I wanted to get anymore, and I was losing the ability to visualize that I was going to get a job.
Okay. Like,
it became more and more difficult for me to believe that I could go to an audition, get called back, then go get called back to the studio, then go to the network, and that they would actually choose me. Like,
yeah.
I was having a lot of trouble with that belief system anymore. Like, I just wasn't seeing it. And I think that if you've lost that, you probably aren't going to get those jobs. Maybe they're correlative, or maybe they're not. I don't know. But and this thing came at a really good time, and I was bartending for money, and I was working in a adolescent rehab hospital for money, and this really allowed me to be an actor still. And once I sort of took my ego out of it, it was really a really good thing for me as a person in my home life, my happiness quotient, and like my life.
Well, it is you saying ego is really interesting, because ego plays such a huge part in where we are in life.
Yeah.
Dustin and I often say Dustin is like my sage mentor, because or I lean on him for some advice as I was a teacher.
You can see that, by the way, for the people who are listening. You can see clearly that you're a mess. And he keeps the thing. You know,
John said the same thing. Did he? I think he did. No, he said we're both really good looking and we should be on camera. Right. And I'm like, nah, he is, not me.
You could both do it. This could blow up. It's when $2 late fee went live things changed.
Yeah, you were going to do that.
I was going to do a little Instagram live. I should probably do that.
But I was going to say specifically about the ego, because I deal with that on a regular basis all the time, that I think we all do in some degree. You know, I think it's just being human beings on this journey we call life, not to get too whatever about it. But I was a career teacher, and then I became a voice actor. And it went from consistent, steady, knowing what I was doing all the time to what's going to happen next. It's like being in a long-term relationship and suddenly having to start dating again.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wait, I thought we had a good date. Why are we going to go on date number two? You know?
Right.
And this idea that what makes you happy? Is it about the perception that other people have of you that makes you happy? Or is it about your own journey being comfortable with who you are and it's a struggle. It's a struggle on all the time. You know, it's like, wait, I want to achieve this, but I also want to be happy. But what is happiness? Is it having a healthy house, you know, strong relationship, me being a father, you know, financially stable? Is that what makes me happy? Yeah. What is it, the fame and the fortune that so many people strive for, the next Instagram follower or whatever? And you think it's all about your priorities. And you found this niche, you know, this ADR job that has been very successful for you and has allowed you to show up in your pajamas or whatever, you know, or like today you're half naked. And, you know, so this idea that you can go on and...
He's not lying.
I'm not.
This business is a real microcosm of I think, mining those issues for people, you know. But totally. Obviously we've learned, if we haven't learned by now, that fame and fortune doesn't make you happy.
Yeah,
what are we doing? But there's examples of it all the time still, like, you know, that people seem to appear to get all the things that they thought they wanted and it wasn't enough and they do terrible things. You
know? Well, everybody we've had on this show, coincidentally, in a good way, has had this kind of journey, this arc, you know, and going through the ups and downs and the highs and lows, and we're reaching the meta point where they all seem to be relatively happy with where they are in life, which is the point. And that's a part of our podcast as well, is like being happy for where you are, you know?
Yeah.
And whether the 80s, we love the 80s, everything about the 80s we love, it's that nostalgic time. But who we are now as adults and presently is, you know, being in that good place.
Yeah. I mean, if your podcast was about movies in the 2010s, you may not find the same, you know, you're interviewing people who have a lot of distance from this time of their life. Maybe they're still famous for being an actor, or maybe they're not, but they have a lot of distance from those movies that they did, with a lot of hindsight and retrospect, hopefully. Totally. And if they're still alive, means they've survived.
Yeah.
You know, yep. to this point. So hopefully they would have some perspective that would, you know, and hopefully they're happy. Yeah. Hopefully they found something in their life that, you know, happy. I don't know. It's such a bad word. Happy, whatever it is.
Well,
fulfilled, meaningful.
Happy,
you know.
To give.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think you just touched upon something that we talk about a lot, though, which is that basically in this business, there is no linear path. It's not like you've achieved this one movie and then on to the next and on to the next. Sometimes it is that case. It's fortunate. But nothing we do is linear or makes sense.
And it doesn't mean anything that I like may not say today that, yeah, I can't imagine I would ever do another movie or TV show. And tomorrow, somebody I know calls me and says, hey, I want you to do this little bit in my thing.
Yeah.
And it turns into some, like, you just, there's no.
Once this episode airs, I guarantee you something will happen. We're putting out the manifestation. That's what we do. We put out
manifestation.
You've spoken to John, right? His life is
since the day
much
he
better.
Walked out
since
of here. It's a true story.
Well, you know, he was like, I don't know when Undateable John's going to air. And then, like, the next day. Damn. I think he got distribution.
The trailer
or
dropped
or something.
On
yeah,
Amazon.
It was like the next.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's probably us. But
and
yeah.
Ghost
how
Babe.
Could it not
right.
be?
That's what I'm saying. So you put it out there.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. That was an absolute blast.
Thank you, Matt. I really
well,
appreciate it.
We want to thank you for being on our show.
That was really fun.
And hopefully the next time when you're on, we can do a little reunion with John Philbin.
Absolutely.
And this has been a pleasure, this journey from A to Z.
Yeah, for me too.
Yeah,
thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, listen, I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a four... Is it five-star rating? Don't forget to subscribe and give us a five-star rating on iTunes. We'd really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFee Podcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.